This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. This Monday, Washington University's Center for the Environment kicks off its second annual week of events focused on environmental research with an intentionally interdisciplinary twist. And to highlight that dynamic, this year's programming features a special performance of music inspired by science and created to expand our understanding of climate change. Dan Jamar is the director of WashU's Center for the Environment and a professor of engineering. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thanks a lot, Elaine. Glad to be here.
And also with us is composer and WashU composition professor Christopher Stark. Chris is part of the school's Center for the Environment as well. Welcome to you as well, Chris.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you for joining us today. So, Dan, let's begin with you. What is the Center for the Environment? Is it a physical space, for example?
Sure. We do have a physical space, but it's relatively small. The Center for the Environment is really a network of faculty and students and staff across all of the units of Washington University who are doing work to advance solutions to climate change, environment, and to advance sustainability.
Mm-hmm. When was the center born?
We were born July 2023. So we're just over 2.5 years old.
Mm-hmm. And you've been involved from the very beginning?
I have. Okay. I was the inaugural director of the center, and I'm nearing the end of my third year here. And I was also involved in some of the planning that led to this. And really, the Center for the Environment came out of a university-wide strategic planning effort that Beverly Wendland, our former provost, put together. Mm-hmm. And that's really where we came from.
Right. So, Chris, as a professor of composition, how did you become involved with the Center for the Environment?
So a lot of my work involves subject matter around nature and climate. And I started searching around campus for initiatives where people were working on this. And I found a program, a small program called the WashU Climate Change Program. And I went to lunches and things with these people and heard their graduate students talk about climate change or professors talk about climate change. And it was a small operation and eventually got folded into this larger operation of the Center for the Environment, which has been great to sort of attend lots of lectures and meet other professors on campus who maybe normally we wouldn't sort of be in the same room, a scientist and a musician, but it's allowed me to do that.
Mm-hmm. Are there any examples of like interesting conversations that you, each of you, have had with academics who are studying very different things from what each of you are?
For sure.
Yeah.
I attended a talk with somebody who was talking about prescribed burns and how plants regrow after a prescribed burn, and I was able to talk to them and say, hey, can I get any footage, perhaps, of these prescribed burns that I could use potentially for an art piece or a composition that I could use visual element for? So that's one example where I was able to sort of collaborate with somebody who, using something that they were just using as documentation that I was going to use then eventually artistically.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Dan?
Oh, absolutely. I think it happens, you know, almost on a weekly basis, getting different people in the room for different types of conversations. One that I'm really happy about is we connected our world-class air quality expertise with our world-class School of Medicine. They're separated by Forest Park, just 2 miles away, and they mm-hmm. didn't really know about each other's expertise. So getting them in the room together, they have the same goal of protecting public health, but because they were not connected, they weren't having those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Is there similar work happening at institutions across the country or, you know, across the globe?
There are. And actually, I'm a co-lead of a group. We call it Academic Consortium for Climate, Energy, and Sustainability Solutions, which are other private research universities with university-wide centers. Mm-hmm. And we get together on a monthly basis. I think WashU has some real unique things that we're trying to do. But you know, the rest of higher ed is also looking at how do we do our part to use our knowledge creation, our training purposes to solve these environmental challenges.
Mm-hmm. How do partnerships come into play with this? Because this is a, you know, the Environmental Research and Creativity Week, which we noted mm-hmm. in the intro. It is aimed quite a bit at the WashU community. So we're talking about the students mm-hmm. at the undergraduate level, the graduate level, you know, professors like yourselves. But how is it that that community is also part of what you all are doing?
Absolutely. Partnership is a huge part of what we try to do with the Center for the Environment. And I'll start with what we do just internally at Washington University. Environmental Research and Creativity Week starts next week. It has 15 events, But the vast majority of those we're actually doing in partnership with other organizations that are partners of the Center for the Environment. And I'll highlight Tyson Research Center, just down Interstate 44, part of WashU. They are studying the human history of that piece of land, and there's going to be a roundtable on that. So really, they provide the expertise, and we boost the visibility. Mm-hmm. More regionally, I'll give a shout out to the Living Earth Collaborative, which the Thursday night event at the St. Louis Zoo is focused on conservation success stories. And the Living Earth Collaborative is a very close partner of the Center for the Environment. And its real unique combination is it brings WashU, the St. Louis Zoo, and the Missouri Botanical Garden. And so they'll have this event, Hope in Action, Conservation Success Stories at the St. Louis Zoo this coming Thursday.
Mm-hmm. So Monday is when everything gets started. Things run through Friday next week. And Dan, you had shared with me that one of the things that's notably different about this year's programming is the Climate Change in Concert event on Tuesday afternoon. Chris, tell us how that came together. Was it your idea?
So I've been talking with members of the Center for the Environment for a while about a concert. I was gone last year, so I wasn't able to do it then, even though we had discussed it. And so it finally came to fruition this year. And I think it's important to have sort of creative events like this as part of a week like this to show that there are many different ways in which we can approach some of these subjects, and that you don't necessarily have to be an engineer or a biologist or a politician even, or somebody like this, to sort of address these issues or to raise awareness about them.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you have to add to that, Dan?
We have a great team at the Center for the Environment, and Alex Morales-Heil, one of our program managers, knew Chris, has known Chris for 6 years. And it's kind of funny. It's actually exactly how we want to do things. We don't actually know who approached who. We knew we wanted to do this because we're in conversation, and this year was the right year to do it. We're super excited.
So provenance is not that important in this case. Well, let's talk more about Climate Change in Concert. Now, Chris, this event, which will feature a live performance by violinist Clara Kim, consists of four pieces. Two are compositions by composer and multimedia artist Lele Hua Lanzalotti, and then two are by you. Let's hear a bit of one of those. This is from your piece, Chris, called Je Do. Chris, what are we hearing there?
So this comes at the very end of this movement, which is about 7 minutes long. And what you're hearing is these high piano sounds, which are a sort of recorded capture of what the pianist has played previously and then gradually sped up through computer software. And if we listen even longer, which, you'll do maybe on Tuesday, eventually it speeds up so quickly that it starts to sound like insects. And so I'm trying to find a sort of liminal space between insect sounds and musical sounds, and sort of how some of those things actually sound quite similar when something is slowed down or sped up.
Mm-hmm. And why did you choose this for Climate Change in Concert?
So this comes from a larger piece called Fire Ecologies, where I traveled in the Western United States in 2020 and sort of documented some of the wildfire season that year. And this short movement, I made a music video out of with a former WashU student, actually, who's now in New York. And we wanted to sort of highlight in this video some sort of climate action through a sort of narrative storytelling. It's almost like a short film with using this piece as kind of a soundtrack. And so I thought it would be a nice thing to sort of screen at this concert, this music video that's relatively new off of this album, to sort of show how artists are sort of engaging with this subject matter. And give some people a sense that a musician can engage with climate change in a way, in a very direct way, and not have to sort of always sort of be in the realm of kind of abstraction and abstract sound and instrumental sound.
Mm-hmm. The other composition that will be part of the performance will come from Second Nature. And I'd like to break this down sort of in pieces so that we can get a better sense of how this comes together. Now, in this first clip, we're hearing the recording of a cicada from the mountains very far away in northern Thailand. This is something, Chris, that you recorded in 2019. So we're hearing it as is and then slowed down. And now here is a violin imitating that slowed down cicada hum. And then finally, a violin building music from that cicada hum imitation. So I'm going to come to you, Dan. What do you think hearing that?
Oh, I love it. You know, I remember the cicadas from a couple of years ago, and yeah, I like hearing it. I'm trying to figure out what I'm hearing, how it's going to connect with fire ecology. It's making me think about climate change in a way I might not have before.
Mm-hmm. And is that the point, Chris?
Yeah, I always try to reserve something in my pieces from nature as being the sort of most interesting sound of the piece, because a lot of the time people think in contemporary classical music that we're just working with really far out kind of sounds and that it doesn't make any sense. But actually, the natural world is quite complex and noisy. And this cicada, when slowed down, actually sounds like a synthesizer or something, but it's just a cicada sound. And that becomes the basis, in a way, for the rest of this kind of, you know, more contemporary music, which in a way is almost more conservative than actually the cicada is in its sort of experimental sound.
Mm-hmm. When I spoke with Clara Kim earlier this week, we actually talked about cicadas we have heard in Korea and how different insects, they sound different in different parts of the world. And listening to that composition after having talked with her just sort of brought it home in a new way. And we had lots of cicadas here just a couple of years ago. The way that you are playing, Chris, with nature and technology, how do you think that is that's important as we're talking about the environment and climate change in particular?
Yeah, so it's interesting how topics in art can sort of take on a relevancy. And right now, I mean, at the time, I'm just writing about my experience with nature, trying to sort of glorify the natural world in what I'm writing and thinking about sort of how we're losing some of these things. But now technology has become a huge basically suck on the environment with these sort of contentious, you know, debates about data centers and AI. And it's a big issue, which I did not actually foresee. But so this has sort of taken on now, using a computer and using electronics and using technology with classical instruments now feels like it's some kind of commentary on this, whereas when it was written, it was not. But that just shows you sort of how, you know, far-reaching some of these things are when how they affect the environment.
Mm-hmm. You talked about connecting with another professor at WashU and using some of the footage that he didn't really know what he was going to do with for video. And there will be, you know, a multimedia aspect to the concert on Tuesday. How does that also convey sort of what you want to deliver through this performance?
So I'm really inspired by actually a lot of authors and journalists who work in creative nonfiction, who kind of blur this line between personal storytelling and sort of journalism and kind of hard facts, people like Elizabeth Colbert or even Terry Tempest Williams, Elizabeth Rush. And so I didn't used to think in the past that I could show kind of like documentation as something that could be artistic. But those authors kind of showed me that you could write something that feels like art, but that could also have a sort of documentation message or sort of a political message or an activist message that is sort of more, you know, nonfiction. And so that's kind of what I'm hoping to convey there, is that there's some element of it that is just literal documentation about sort of the world as it is now and sort of thinking about how to save that.
Mm-hmm. Dan, how much of what Chris has just described is reflected in sort of the breadth of those who are participating in what the Center for the Environment is doing?
Oh, it's spot on. I mean, just making these connections is so important. And I'd say one of the things the Center for the Environment really tries to do is connect people across disciplines. And I'm literally sitting here thinking about a project that I want Chris to do with a colleague who I knew in computer science and a colleague in ecology who is using ambient sound recordings to understand the ecosystem and to identify the species there. I think this would be really a fun way to connect all of this.
What do you think of that?
That sounds great.
Down for it.
Ambient sounds, I'm all in.
So we had a chance to talk with Clara Kim. So Clara is not based in St. Louis. She's based in Hawaii. And she's the violinist who will be performing with you on Tuesday. And she talked with us about how creative work does not exist in a vacuum. Kim believes that art should reflect the moment we're in. And the moment in which it's made, and that such responsiveness is essential to keeping it alive.
I think it's important for them to be relevant, exactly what you said, to have a response to these things and to be so deeply influenced by it. I think it's it would be strange not to. And so, I think the relevance of and the importance of this work is I feel very, very important to how we can continue to create art that that responds to these things.
Kim also sees common ground. The scientific and artistic processes both ask questions, explore possibilities, and work collectively to better understand the world.
I think there's definitely an overlap between people in the sciences being sort of having a more technical element, or at least this is what I understand, scientists having a more technical element, but there's a very creative element to that too, and to have creative ways to solve problems or figure out what's happening and to collaborate with other people. And I see a lot of similarities in terms of how artists work as well.
Dan, what do you make of this, the connections between creativity and maybe some of the assumptions that people have that science and research is somehow inherently not creative?
Oh, that's funny you asked that, because we called this Environmental Research and Creativity Week because we wanted to really make sure that we were inclusive of the people at Washington University who understand the world through their creative practice but might not consider themselves researchers or scholars. We wanted a place for them. Now, I'm an engineer, and I like to think, and I think my students who work in my lab, we think we're pretty creative. But we call it research, and that works for our community. So I think creativity, we could actually just start calling it Environmental Creativity Week in the future, which would really be inclusive of both the science and the creative practice, mm-hmm. maybe next year.
Yeah. Chris, have you found that your work, that it catalyzes different kinds of conversations around things like research, around science that is related to the environment?
I hope so. I mean, that's the hope, is that it can let other creative people know, or just even any audience member know, that they have a voice in the world, and that what they care about, they can act upon, whether that's through a poem or writing or doing a study or writing a book, that anybody who's moved to do so can be a part of this. And I hope that my work, when I show it on a concert, that it can sort of say to somebody like, yeah, you can be, you know, creative, or you can be scientific, and that there doesn't have to be hard boundaries between a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm. Something else Clara Kim noted about your work, Chris, is that for her as a performer, much of your work celebrates nature. She said, one of the elements that really captivates me about his writing and his pieces is somehow there's always this aspect of wonder that comes out. Is that something that you're hoping people will experience on Tuesday?
Yeah. I mean, climate change is a pretty dark subject matter, and a lot of art making now that is more activist-based can be pretty depressing. Mm-hmm. And I want to leave space for that, and I am definitely depressed a lot of the time about the news I read. But I can't let go of some kind of optimism or hope. And when I'm making something, just the act of making something feels optimistic and hopeful. And I want the audience to feel like there's a possibility. I don't want them to feel like it's the end. Mm-hmm. I want them to leave the concert thinking there's something beautiful there and something possible there.
Yeah. Dan, as we close, what would constitute success for you, not only for this concert, but also for the entire week?
Sure. You know, the things I'd focus on there, we want to celebrate and showcase all the really interesting work that's going on at WashU, at the university and with our partners. So for us, success means people showed up. And it's about the numbers of people, but I actually think it's more about the diversity of the people. Do we have a musician, a composer, a social psychologist, a political scientist, a geoscientist, all in the same room asking the same questions? So getting these really cross-pollinating discussions, if we can do that, that's success.
Dan Jamar is the director of WashU Center for the Environment and a professor of engineering. And Christopher Stark is a composer and a WashU composition professor. Thank you both for joining us today. Climate Change in Concert takes place on Tuesday, February 24th from 3 to 4:40 p.m. in the Umrath Lounge on WashU's main campus. To register for the event, which will include a Q&A with composer Chris Stark and violinist Clara Kim, visit our website. That's stlonair.show.
This episode was produced by Elaine Cha with production assistance from Lila Halilbashic.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Doerr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.